Cal Banyan here with Cal Banyan's Hypnosis Etc. with Meredith Locker. And if you're watching this anywhere except CalBanyan.com, you want to go there right now because right below this video on CalBanyan.com, what do we have for you? We got links, extra information related to what we're talking to in each episode. By the way, we've got over 100 video episodes just like this. So go there and become a VIP member because VIP members get instant access to all the episodes plus extra special news announcements and specials that go on and stuff like that. Let me introduce you now to Meredith Locker. Let me tell you about her. She is a hypno wizard. She's in LA. If I had a friend that needed hypnosis or wanted hypnotherapy in the Los Angeles, California area, I'd definitely recommend her. She was previously a talk therapist with a master's degree in psychology, and now we've converted her to a hardcore one percenter hypnotherapist. How you doing, Meredith?
I'm great, Cal. How are you?
I'm so good.
Wonderful. Well, let me tell y'all a little bit about Cal. Cal is the trainer of trainers. He is the top, top, top of the top one percenters. I mean, you can't get much topper than that, can you, Cal? He is the person that brought us Five Path, Seventh Path Self-Hypnosis. He is my mentor and somebody I respect a great deal. He's also somebody who recently rode 109 miles on a bicycle. That is our Cal Banyan.
Boy, I am like a hypno rock star, aren't I?
Indeed you are.
Hey, I was riding with a friend of mine who was unable to make the century ride, and we're doing just like a 30-mile during the week ride, and he goes, man, I can't believe what good shape you're in. And he was talking about how he just really couldn't stay motivated, and I'm thinking how lucky I am to be a hypnotist that, you know, motivation is my business. I'm motivating myself, motivating my clients. I mean, it's pretty easy when you have the techniques of hypnotherapy underneath your belt and self-hypnosis. Isn't that right?
Absolutely. Makes you feel darn powerful, doesn't it?
Hey, will you give them your website real quick?
I will. It's yourpathhypnosis.com, and it'll be listed, if you're watching this, on calbanyan.com. It'll be listed right down there. See, Cal, I do it just like you.
Hey, you probably do it better than me. I know that nobody actually tunes in to listen to me. They want to hear your side. There's a gazillion old man hypnotists out there, but to have someone like you, I think with your point of view and delightful personality, we're just really blessed.
Well, thank you. Thank you for that, Cal. And I do hope you all are tuning in. And thank you all for your questions that you've been sending in. We're definitely going to be sure to try to get to those as soon as possible.
Hey, you know, I was telling you, I'm going to do this experimental thing. We have a couple other really talented hypnotherapists at our office, and one of the ones that he just about always teaches a little bit with me when I teach my certification courses, and that's L. Ron Ferguson. We're going to try to do some videotaping with him, and that's going to be a lot of fun. You know, as I'm talking about L. Ron, I'm talking about you, it reminds me, I was on somebody's website the other day, and they were trying to claim that I was, quote, passing the torch on to them. I'm not passing the torch on to anyone. Do I look like I'm about to keel over and die? And if I was going to pass the torch over to anyone, it'd be someone like you or L. Ron.
Well, thank you. Wow. Well, I hope you don't keel over and die sometime soon, because I want you to keep teaching.
Teaching and doing the work. That's what I'm about.
Yes. And I'm very grateful for it.
Let me get a couple announcements in, okay?
Yes.
All right, let's see. Mentioning upcoming stuff. Banyan Hypnosis Certification Course in October. Link below or go to hypnosiscenter.com. And that'll be the Banyan Super Course. It's got NGH approved. It is with Five Path and Seven Path. We also have the Week of Power Advanced Hypnosis Training coming up in November. And the last day is on my birthday, the 14th. That's a Week of Power, and you can save on early enrollment. I'm looking down here at my clipboard. We're scheduling classes right now for next year, so keep checking back to CalBanyan.com and also our new fan page on Facebook.com/hypnosisETC, short for hypnosis, etc. Big announcement. I have been invited to do a training course, a NGH approved hypnosis certification, the Banyan Super Course with Five Path and Seven Path in Malaysia. And I've got this stuff. Oh, I've got it here on my computer. It is going to be in Johor Bahru. And it looks like that's going to be the 18th, the 29th. We'll get the details to you on calbanion.com and facebook.com/hypnosis, etc. And I'm also going to be doing some ultimate recognition classes. That's part of the 7-path self-hypnosis process in Singapore while I'm out in that end of the world. And please fan us and follow us. Fan us on facebook.com/hypnosis, ETC, short for hypnosis, etc. And follow me on Twitter. Just go to www.twitter.com/CalBanyan. That's B-A-N-Y-A-N. All right. Hey, one last thing before we get into our main topic for today, and I think Meredith want to make some comments about this. As we announced on both Twitter and our Facebook page, and I'm not sure if I've announced it on calbanion.com yet, but I had this idea. Wouldn't it be fun to do some faux hypnosis case histories with some interesting folks? And those would be celebrities. So not just dead celebs, but anyone who is famous from the past or in the present, real or fictional. And some of the people that have been suggested so far are Marilyn Monroe. I mean, the idea is, and you could leave some comments right down below, who would you like to see walk into your office? Any celebrity, any historical figure, live or dead, real or fictional, so that you could work with them and make a real positive, significant change in their lives. And so some suggestions are Marilyn Monroe, and then, now, I don't even know who this person is. I'm going to be kind of dumb about some of this. Ruby Dettinger? That's a reality show person, and Cynthia Thurman suggested that person. Do you know who that is?
I do, yeah. She's a woman that's been chronicling her weight loss struggles on a reality TV show, and she's just got a delightful personality. She's a lovely lady, but it's been such a long battle, and I agree with Cynthia. It would be really fun to be able to give her the tools and give her the resolution that, you know, she could experience if she went through a process with us.
Well, I'd love to work with her. That sounds great. And then you mentioned three people that I happened to write down. You might have mentioned more. Lindsay Lohan, Britney Spears, and Amy Winehouse. Who's Amy Winehouse?
You don't know who Amy Winehouse is?
I don't know any of this stuff.
She's mostly famous these days for being kind of a meth head, crack head kind of a person, unfortunately, which is why she needs the work. But she's a Grammy-winning artist, and she came out with one of the most impressive albums, you know, at the time that it came out, and she's just lost it with drugs.
Oh, well, she should come see a really good hypnotherapist, I think.
It would be wonderful. She's in the UK, so we need to find someone there, British, fabulous, doing 5-path or something really close to it.
I think that we could do that. Mm-hmm. All right, a couple more suggestions. John F. Kennedy, Gabriel Mancuso suggested that one. Mike Tyson and Elvis Presley by Lynette Graydon. And Aretha Franklin by Margie O'Neill. And Margie also recommended Howard Hughes. I think Howard Hughes is really interesting because you don't think of him all the time.
Oh, yeah, that would be fascinating.
Or Elvis Presley.
He was quite a character.
We'd do a hunk of burning hypnosis.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking as you were talking, I think Abraham Lincoln would have been really fun to work with.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had gone through a lot of depression in his time and actually had had a lot of failure throughout his career before he became president. It was finally, he kept pushing and pushing and finally became president and then was killed. Yeah, too bad about that.
Hey, what about, you know, you went out with a bang.
Yeah, indeed.
I don't believe that came out of my mouth. So this is what we want you guys to do. If you have more suggestions, comment underneath this video on calbanion.com, or you can send them to facebook.com/hypnosis, etc. You can leave your comments there. And or if you like someone that we've already mentioned, go ahead and vote for that. One last real quick little thing. I'm so excited about it. We've finally done it. We've been working on it for a long, long time. And we now have a basic to advanced hypnosis and hypnotherapy certification course with 5-Path and 7-Path. It's distance learning. It's study at home. We'll have a link below. And you're going to be hearing a lot more about it in the future. All right, Meredith, I turn the show over to you. Tell us about your topic.
Fabulous. So today I'm going to be talking about eating disorders and involving hypnosis in the treatment of eating disorders. And I'm really excited about this topic. It's something that's near and dear to my heart because I was a specialist in eating disorders prior to becoming a generalist in hypnosis. And so, of course, I still see a lot of eating disorder clients. Just naturally, they get referred to me. They kind of, you know, just are drawn to me somehow mysteriously. And, you know, we really can affect some serious change in these, you know, these really debilitating disorders. And so it's exciting now, on the other side of the fence, using the tools that I have with 5-Path, it's exciting to be able to create change in ways that I wasn't able to do before as a traditional psychotherapist. So the simple answer, you know, as far as how to resolve eating disorders really is, if you're using an advanced systematic approach that involves digging deep and resolving the misperceptions, the thoughts, the fears, and especially the belief systems at the deepest level, then you are going to have the answers already as far as how to work with eating disorders. They're really not that different than any other too much behavior or any other distractor. Now, Cal, we talk about the secret language of feelings. Do you think we need to give a little explanation about that before I move on?
If you're going to talk about the secret language of feelings, I really think you should. And, you know, just thumbnail sketch. And anyone who wants to learn more about the secret language of feelings, just go to www.thesecretlanguageoffeelings.com. I have several audios that you can listen to for free, and they're kind of fun and entertaining, or I did the best I could to make them so.
Yeah, so in a nutshell, essentially, the idea is that someone has a feeling inside they don't like, and they find a distractor that temporarily distracts them from that feeling. And so they feel like, even though it's not resolving the feeling, like it is resolving it, because it does on a very short-term basis. And eating disorders are no different in that sense than alcohol, cigarettes, drugs, even some of the healthier distractors, like, you know, working out, all of those kinds of things. It's really no different. And so if you look at it from that perspective, that you are just looking to resolve a feeling inside that they don't like, and using tools like age regression to do so, you know, you're going to already have a lot of tools in your tool belt to be able to work with anorexia and bulimia, and then the long slew of other eating disorders that are out there right now. It's really important to note that we do not want, and this is kind of a disclaimer, we do not want to decide ahead of time what is causing the eating disorder for the client, because we don't want in any way to lead our client in the wrong direction. We want to lead them to take us to where they need to go, because it's in their subconscious mind. And if there's anything that I have learned in working with eating disorders time and time again, there's a long list of potential causes. And so it's important to kind of take, as I get into some of the causes of eating disorders and some of what I've experienced with my sessions, it's important for you to take that kind of with a grain of salt, just put it in the back of your head, and then as you go into a session with somebody who has, you know, an eating disorder, to kind of just allow them to show you the way to their particular cause. Anything to add to that, Cal?
I think that, you know, you're exactly right. One thing that's nice about, like with 5-Path, is you have a general approach that works with just about everything. And you've got to, you know, kind of not be, I'm trying to think of the right word, it's not be ignorant, but don't make up your mind about the cause of the problem until it is revealed in the process that you're going to take them through. You're exactly right, Meredith.
Beautiful. I love being right. All right, well, so let me get you into some details. I mean, what are eating disorders anyway? I realize that some of you have a great deal of knowledge about them, and this is just a refresher if that's the case for you, and some of you know nothing about eating disorders, and so I thought it was important to start here. Basically, here in the United States, where we, how we categorize and where we get definitions for eating disorders in the field of psychology is from the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. And right now we're working off the fourth edition, and it's better known as the DSM-4. And it is published by the American Psychiatric Association, and it covers all the mental health disorders for both children and adults. And for more specifics, for, you know, the actual specifics of what the DSM-4 says about anorexia and bulimia, etc., you can certainly Google it. There are all kinds of sites that actually list it just as it's written in the manual itself. But in a nutshell, anorexia is the restricting of food. Now, one big misperception out there is that that means that all they do is not eat. And the truth is they also throw up. And so I know most people think if somebody throws up, vomits, purges, then they must be bulimic, and that's absolutely not true. Anorexics, according to the DSM-4, are either purging type or non-purging type. Did you know that, Cal?
You learn something new every day.
He's joking. But these clients are often on the thin side. Now, I also want to make sure to note to you that not all of these clients are going to look like the clients that you might see or the people that you might see on television. Of course, on television, they over-dramatize everything. And so when you see these programs, you know, they're going to the most extreme hospitals with the most extreme clients. Don't be surprised if the clients that come into you stating they have a diagnosis of anorexia or bulimia or something else, don't be surprised if they look very normal, and if you walked past them on the street, you wouldn't have even known that they had an eating disorder. That's more so the case than the cases where they look like skin and bone skeletal. But essentially, the anorexic is going to be on the thinner side, and so that's typically where they draw the line between anorexics and bulimics. Plus, anorexics don't binge, so they don't overeat. So when they throw up, they're throwing up a regular size meal. They might even eat an apple and throw that up. It's just too much for them to allow in. The bulimic is the person who binges on larger quantities of food and then gets rid of that by either vomiting, over-exercising, use of laxatives or diuretics, and they can also restrict, and so they can go into these cycles where they binge for maybe a whole day, and then the next day they might not eat anything, and so that would be considered a bulimic. And now most bulimics are actually either normal weight or more typically 10 to 15 pounds overweight, which these days might look like normal weight, you know, to most of us, because, you know, a lot of people are carrying around 10 or 15 extra pounds these days. So that is the bulimic. Now, the other thing in the DSM-4 is eating disorder not otherwise specified. And so they created this other category that's just like the lumping place for everything else that doesn't fit into the categories of anorexia or bulimia. And now those are really the only formally recognized diagnostic codes, okay? Now, apart from that, there are lots of other eating disorders that are being kind of, the words, names, labels that are being thrown around in the eating disorder community, and so I'll share some of those with you. Now, in the DSM-4, in the appendix, as kind of an add-on, they did add to it binge eating disorder. And so binge eating disorder is more universally recognized in the field than compulsive overeating. And so that's, they're kind of sister terms, essentially. They're basically the same thing. And so you'll hear those used interchangeably. And now just let me just share a few more. Cal, did you have any questions? Or you want me to just keep on going?
Well, you know, not really any questions. If you can not lose track of where you are, I just want to put a little comment in here for our, you know, most of the people that are watching this are not psychologists, they're not psychiatrists, they're not licensed to diagnose. And so I just want to make a little comment about how to handle these diagnoses.
Beautiful, yes, you're absolutely right. When I talk about these diagnoses, I'm telling you because clients will most likely either self-diagnose themselves and say, I think I might have this, or they're going to come to you saying, I've already been diagnosed with this. And I, in this current phase of my career, do not diagnose. And so if somebody comes to me and they say, I think I have an eating disorder, fine. Then they come to me and we look at the behaviors that they're concerned about and we look at what they would rather be doing and then we do the work accordingly. But I never set a diagnosis where there isn't already one. But most of these people, especially with the more kind of extreme eating disorders, are already going to have a diagnosis that was given to them by their treatment team. And I was going to talk about that a little later, but since I mentioned it, usually a person with an eating disorder, if they've had it for a little while, has a treatment team. And at a minimum, this will consist of a medical doctor, a psychiatrist, and a psychologist. And then oftentimes they have a nutritionist or a dietitian, which is essentially the same thing. And so that's kind of the foursome that a typical person with an eating disorder would have. And now, of course, that's going to be costly to have that kind of thing. And so one thing to be aware of is that someone with an eating disorder has really extinguished their resources if they've had it for a little while. And so don't be surprised if they contact you looking for some sort of a discount. Eating disorders they kind of started in higher income families, but they've evolved into kind of hitting all different socio and economic levels at this point. And so there used to be a time when the families had plenty of money to pay for it because it was considered a rich girl's disease. And it's not really that way anymore. It's affecting boys, it's affecting men, it's affecting people of all levels socioeconomically. Did that answer, did I get into that about enough, Cal?
Yeah, and the thing is, if someone is referred to you by someone who's licensed to diagnose, then in your notes, you can say that you're working on, you're working on anorexia. But if the person has not been diagnosed, don't go around diagnosing people if you're not licensed to do so. And if the person is not diagnosed, just describe the behavior. You say, for example, the person is not eating enough, or the person is having bouts of eating to excess, abusing food, like someone might abuse alcohol, and use language like that if they're non-diagnosed. And then I highly recommend that you build a relationship with your doctor or other psychological or medical professionals in your area so that you can then refer people for diagnosis if they, if it appears to you that they've got a severe problem so that they can be diagnosed and watched, because people really do have major medical problems that can be life-threatening with anorexia and with bulimia. Isn't that true?
Yes, absolutely. I was going to be getting into this, but the medical referral is essential for us to work with these clients. Even if somebody does not look extremely thin, most of the time these people are doing things to their body that throws off their body chemistry to the point that they could be a heart attack risk walking around just waiting to happen. And you really want to make sure that this person is being seen and supervised by a medical doctor at a minimum. And so one of my very first questions to somebody who either thinks they have an eating disorder or who has been diagnosed with one is, are you currently being seen regularly by a medical doctor? And would it be okay with you if I go ahead and contact them for the approval, essentially, to work with you? And I get that referral. It's imperative. And if they do not have a doctor, I personally, because I do a lot of this work, have specialists that I can refer them to. I mean, really any doctor would be better than no doctor, but there are specialists these days that are working specifically with eating disorders and just happen to know a little bit more with what is involved with eating disorders. And so I'll refer them out and I'll say, I need you to go and see this doctor first before I'll be willing to proceed with sessions with you. Anything to add to that, Cal?
Nope, I think you're doing great.
Okay, beautiful. So just to get into a few of the other kinds of eating disorders that we find out there, and now these are not formal labels, but you may hear of these in the media at times. You may have a client call and say they have one of these disorders. And so one of the kind of up and coming on the rise eating disorders is dia bulimia. And now this is something that is for diabetics, and it's particular to diabetics, and it's where they abuse their insulin to be able to modify their weight in some way, shape, or form. Usually it's to stay thin. And so that's diabulimia. I've been finding a lot of that lately. Compulsive overeating, like I told you before, that's pretty much the same thing as binge eating disorder, but you'll hear the terms used interchangeably. Pica, that's an interesting one. It was originally thought to occur only in young children, but we've been finding more and more that this does happen, and I'll tell you what it is in just a second, but it is also happening in women around the time of pregnancy, so either during pregnancy or after pregnancy, and it's usually temporary, but of course we're creatures of habit, and so sometimes we can kind of develop habits after a time of this kind of thing. And what pica is it's kind of an odd craving. It's a craving for non-food items, and so they either eat or lick or maybe chew and then spit out non-food items like paper or chalk or crayons, all kinds of really interesting things. And that's pica. Prader-Willi syndrome, and there's been kind of some news press on this more recently, and this is considered to be present at birth. I mean, it'd be interesting for us to find out. I haven't actually worked with one of these clients, but I would love to know if it actually is indeed present at birth using age regression. But it's an insatiable appetite. It's those people who they have to lock the cabinets. It's a major problem for these parents who have to deal with kids who end up then really not being able to take care of themselves because all they want to do is eat all the time. Kelly, you thought you had a problem, huh?
I know. I was just telling I was telling her, you know what? I'd love to live in the land of 6 huge meals a day because I love to eat.
Well, good thing you don't have this because clearly you would be much, much, much more feeling like you're not getting enough food than you do now. Sleep eating disorders are interesting, and they're actually considered a sleep disorder according to the DSM-4, and it's where people kind of sleepwalk and eat, and they don't particularly remember it. You know, they'll be told by a spouse or a roommate, or they'll find the crumbs in the kitchen later after they've pigged out on Lord knows what, and they've done all of this in their sleep. Sometimes people will wake up in the middle of it, and that's how they know about it. Sometimes they won't find out until they find the clues later. Body dysmorphic disorder is really kind of on the fringes of an eating disorder. It's not exactly an eating disorder, but it's essentially where there's a preoccupation or an obsession with a particular defect in visual appearance. And so it can be somebody who's just obsessed with their nose being wrong. And now these days, plastic surgery helps a lot of these people to fix problems, but then what they do is they end up getting addicted to the plastic surgery. And so oftentimes somebody who's had a great deal of plastic surgery, you'll find the body dysmorphic disorder was really what was going on there. Orthorexia is really interesting. Cal was kind of mocking me about this when I mentioned this to him earlier. Orthorexia. And now that's an obsession with pure eating or, you know, extremely healthy meal plan. And so this is a person who would have a really hard time going to a wedding or going out to dinner with friends because they really want to control exactly what they're putting in their body all the time, whether they're extreme vegans or, you know, they just really have a lot of extreme problems with allowing new kinds of foods or anything they consider to be unhealthy into their body. And then another one that's really kind of interesting, it's been on the rise in the last few years, is bigorexia. And this is with mostly men, but it can happen with women, and it's where it's typically a bodybuilder's challenge, and it's where they don't think they're big enough and they just want to keep getting bigger. And so these are people who end up kind of going to some big extreme methods like steroids or high protein diets that can cause a lot of damage to the kidneys, and they can end up having some serious problems. Now, of course, if you're a healthy eater, no one's saying that you have orthorexia, and if you want to be muscular, certainly, you know, don't go and diagnose yourself with bigorexia. The only time that these things are an issue is when it's impacting your life in a negative way and stopping you from being able to live your life the way you normally would. And so you're not able to keep a job because you're obsessing about it too much, not able to pay the bills, not able to have relationships, things like that. So when it's really impacting your life in a negative way, that's when they need to come see us. Right, Cal?
Yes. Now, how are we doing on time?
We've got to cut this off. And so I've got a lot more to share about eating disorders. Looking forward to sharing more of it soon. This is Meredith Locker signing off.
Give them your website one more time.
It's yourpathhypnosis.com.
All right. Hey, you know what Meredith is going to do next time? She doesn't even know this yet. She's going to tell you next episode, of a famous musician who died because of eating disorder, and some sports where eating disorders are prevalent. And I'm not just talking about sumo wrestling. All right. This is Cal Banyan. I got a couple of things here. Speaking of eating right, if you want to hear about my secret project, get healthy, get slim, get energetic, email me at calbanyan@hypnosiscenter.com. I'm going to help you get in shape, going to help your clients get in shape, and I'm going to add some income to your business. Let's see. Please visit my websites, hypnosiscenter.com. That's for course schedules. Got a whole bunch of other stuff there, too. Hypnosis.org. You can get a free listing in our hypnosis directory and ourhypnospace.com, where you can join the conversation. This is Cal Banyan, signing off. This recording is the property of Cal Banyan and Cal Banyan's Banyan Publishing Incorporated. All rights reserved, for private use only, may not be duplicated without written permission.